Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 149 in this series entitled Summation of the Tanya, Chapters 1 through 25, Personal Reflections on Teaching Tanya. This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, on the 11th of Nisan, 5762.
Just to get into the spirit of things, let's maybe begin with one of the Negunim of the Alter Rebbe, who is really the maestro of tonight's celebration. Start with one of the melodies of the Alter Rebbe. Keliyata v'yaydeko Le'oika
Maya,
The Alter Rebbe wrote the Tanya intermittently for 20 years. So to teach it for 6 years is no big deal. 20 years, the Alter Rebbe, he devoted 20 years of his life intermittently to write it and rewrite it and edit it and embellish it for 20 years. When we began the class, it was winter of 1997, Tavshin Nun Zayin. It was in the library on 45th and 16th Avenue. So I don't know if you remember, some of you might remember that there was a Jew, the third or fourth week, he had a long white beard, I still don't know his name, and he stood up and he said, "Rabbi Jacobson, I calculated the way you're teaching, and if based on how you're teaching now, I calculate how long it's going to take you to finish the first section of Tanya, it's going to take you 22 years. And he said, "By that time, I don't think I will be alive anymore. And since I am interested in finishing the Tanya, I can't come back anymore." He said, "It's too long." It was a lesson to speed up the process. So Baruch Hashem, instead of 22 years, you remember he stood up, he made an announcement. It took 6, and I certainly hope this Jew is still around with us and will be around after 22 years, but I haven't seen him since. I think it is only a fear at a siyum, at this siyum celebration, to attempt the impossible and present a extremely brief synopsis of a 6-year endeavor in the course of 25 or 35 minutes. General Montgomery once said, "The difficult we do immediately and the impossible takes a little bit longer." General Montgomery. So I will attempt to do that now, and then we will continue with Farbrenging and hearing from you, hopefully, etc. In the title page of his magnum opus, the Alter Rebbe presents his mission statement. Uncharacteristic for any Jewish book written at his time, or till his time, to open up a title page and present the mission statement and the raison d'etre of the book. And it is, he says, to explain Moshe Rabbeinu's verse in Parshas Nitzavim, that Torah and Yiddishkeit is not a cross. You've heard this dozens and dozens of times, so you'll hear it another time. That Torah and Mitzvahs is not something that's across the sea, me'ever l'yami, so one can say who is going to swim across the sea and reach it. It's not up in the heavens so that somebody can ask, Miyala lanu hashamayim, who is going to ascend to heaven and claim it, but rather, this thing is very near and close to you, in your mouth and in your heart, so that you can perform it. So the Alter Rebbe said, my goal in this Sefer is to explain well, Eichu Karav Miyoid. How can Moshe Rabbeinu make such a claim, obviously dictated by Hashem, that Torah, that Yiddishkeit, is not only close, but it's very close to a person. It's intimately connected and can become accessibly relevant and near a human being, is difficult to comprehend. As he explains in the Tanya, in your mouth and that you should perform it is difficult enough. But in your heart, we are physical people. We are materialistic people. We are egocentric people. That in your heart, one Moshe Rabbeinu could say Yiddishkeit should be close and very close and intimately near, needs a book. It needs a book. And I always say just the title page is a lesson, even if you don't learn the rest of the Tanya. It's a twofold lesson. First of all, how the Alter Rebbe treats a verse in the Bible. An ordinary person would say, Moshe was a poet. Moshe was a sentimental human being. Moshe was talking about himself. Whatever you mean. But the Alter Rebbe says in 17, he nitzchis, every word in the Torah is eternally relevant. So that means he's talking to 21st century Jews who use America Online, cell phones, own two cars, and know a thing or two about ugly demons and egotistical inclinations. I mean, that itself is a tremendous lesson. But I think what is even more important, I'm not going to do this with every chapter, don't know. We're not going to sit here now. No. But I think the title page, I think, deserves the attention. The second thing is the question that a Jew 200 years ago, living in a little shtetl in Lyazhna, should ask a question that is plaguing almost every thinking and feeling Jew today. Isn't Judaism a repressive, superimposed, alien document that often seems as a doctrine that robs people from their freedom, their liberty, their individualism, and just their rights to express themselves the way they wish and to live a life that is consistent with their own moods and their own Weltanschauung and their own emotions and their own feelings. Something that, let's face it, in this generation has caused mass assimilation, and even among religious Jews, it's something that eats on us, sometimes in a revealed way or in a concealed way. And that he raised this question hundreds of years ago, I always found very comforting, very consoling. That's his goal. If you finish learning Tanya, and it's not Karav Ma'id, you have to start over again. In the first chapter, the Alter Rebbe establishes his sources in Gemara, upon which he bases his entire doctrine known as the doctrine of two souls. He begins by searching for the exact definitions of the terms tzaddik, beinoni, and rasha, which we translate as the righteous man, the wicked man, and the intermediate man, but which the Alter Rebbe proves immediately is an inaccurate translation. his contribution in the first chapter is that a major part of Judaism is not measured according to one's external behavior, but rather according to his essential state of heart and mind, to the extent that there can be a Jew who in behavior has never sinned and will never sin, and he is deemed exclusively a Beinoni and never a Tzaddik. Which proves to us that Yiddishkeit is a perspective, is a lifestyle that doesn't only deal with the limbs and the organs of a person. Here is a person whose limbs and organs are totally holy, and he's still called a Beinoni, or she's still called a Beinoni. Right here in the first chapter, he created the groundwork for his revolution. That a major part of the play of Judaism, of the life of Yiddishkeit and of a Yid, it relates to one's internal life, to one's personality, consciousness, emotions and feelings. In this chapter, he established the foundation that every Jew possesses two souls. We operate on two levels of consciousnesses. And at the end of the first chapter, he began to discuss the definition, the character and the nature of the animal soul and its moods and emotions. The second chapter, the Alter Rebbe introduces that major or most important theme of the whole Tanya, that we each have a nefesh ha'elikis, a divine spark, a chelik alakami mal mamish, a reflection of Hashem within our own psyche. We have a consciousness, a personality, a divine soul. And what he's saying here is, we all have questions in life, we all have hindrances in life, we all have confusions in life. Each one sitting around this table, or those who will listen to it, know we each have our questions and confusions in life. Comes the Alter Rebbe in chapter 2 and says, the answer to your questions and problems lay not in books, in texts, in teachers, in psychiatrists, in therapeutic programs. These may be nice and important and vital, but the answer to your problems lay in you, in your soul, in your infinity, in the part of you that reflects the harmony and the goodness and the fearlessness and the courage and the completion of its creator. For somebody today to come and say this is, nobody blinks an eye, but more than 200 years ago, a person should write this, that the answer to a person's issues and problems lay in you. This in the sense, I don't want to reduce it to it, but in a sense it can be defined as the first self-help book that was ever written. Because the Alter Rebbe feels it's not only self-help, the help lay in the self, in the part of self that is selfless, that is divine. It's like the story a rabbi told me lately. A rabbi once got up before his congregation, and he said, I discovered this Wednesday a hole in the roof of the synagogue, a major hole. But I have good news and bad news. The good news is that I have the money to repair it. The bad news is that the money is in your pockets. So spiritually and psychologically speaking, the resources, the money to fix the hole in your roof and in my roof lay not in my mother's pockets or my mother-in-law's pockets or my therapist's pockets, but in my soul. Look at yourself, trust yourself, go into that part of yourself. Chapter 3, the Alter Rebbe examines the 10 essential faculties that make up the persona of the divine soul. 3 intellectual and 7 experiential. Chachma bina das, and the 7 experiential emotions of chesed through malchus. He also teaches us in chapter 3 a point that many of his own colleagues opposed, and that is that healthy emotions and healthy feelings are only those that are born as a result and as a consequence of an intellectual process. Or rather, complete emotions, full-fledged emotions, well-developed emotions, emotions that are solid, are emotions that are born from a father and a mother, just like a healthy child is a child that has a father and a mother that guided it, that have guided it, educated it, inspired it. Chapter 4. The Alter Rebbe explains the three garments of the divine soul. The three facilitators, the three instruments of expression of the divine soul. Thought, speech, and deeds, behavior. In the divine soul, these garments express themselves in the behavior, in the words and in the thoughts of Torah and mitzvahs, which are the instruments of expression for the identity of the divine soul, of the transcendental consciousness. Here the Alter Rebbe contributes a major revolution by stating that the garments of the divine soul reign supreme and are infinitely superior to the spiritual consciousness and godliness of the soul per se. Because it's through the mitzvahs, it's through the Torah, that the soul transcends its own identity as a created being, as a divine spark that has assumed a consciousness, and it connects with Hashem Himself, being the Torah and mitzvahs are the wisdom and the will of Hashem that are one with Him. So the Alter Rebbe says, the physical act of doing a mitzvah transcends the deepest spiritual or meditative experiences of a transcendental yearning soul. Chapter 5, he delves into the tremendous concept of Limud HaTorah, which remains throughout the Tanya the love of his life, if I may say so. He vacillates, to be sure, between mitzvahs and Torah, and Torah and mitzvahs and the world, but ultimately you can see that Torah is, if I can use the expression, is Eishes Na'urim. That's, you know, the woman of his dream. That's where his soul is at. And, I mean, if one can express himself that way about the Alter Rebbe, saying that Torah, in a sense, is superior to mitzvahs, being that it is an intellectual experience, it is the only possible means a human being has through which Hashem's mindset, so to speak, Hashem's wisdom, Hashem's way of thought can become assimilated, digested, ingested within the human being's character, within the human being's frame of mind. Divinity becomes part of his identity only through Torah, unlike as in any other experience of Yiddishkeit. Chapter 6. He begins discussing the 10 faculties of the animal soul, of the animal consciousness, which is defined by the eye. The animal consciousness is defined by the fact that at the core of its identity lay the quest for self-preservation and self-gratification. He discusses its three... We're talking about the animal soul, so it's just a visualization. And the three natural expressions of the animal soul, of thought, and speech, and words. And here he explains that what is the animal soul? The animal soul is not a consciousness that inherently craves evil things or lusts destruction or immorality. That is a later stage in its evolvement. But the initial pristine state of mind and heart of the animal soul is that dimension of consciousness that defines you and me as something that is outside the realm of the spirit. Any definition of myself or yourself as something which is not noble, holy, godly, spiritual, and transcendental stems from the animal soul. The definition of me or you as ego, as self-centered, as self-conscious, is a product of the Weltanschauung, of the philosophy of the animal soul. And therefore, any thought, word, or behavior that perpetuates this theory that man is outside of the spirit, that man is outside of Hashem's realm of oneness, that these thoughts, words, or behaviors are called garments for the philosophy of the animal soul. I mean, every line here is another revolution, literally another revolution. This we call klipa. It's a shell, it's a husk concealing godliness. We never have such disturbances in the class.
Superimposed.
Huh?
Superimposed.
It's the last attempt of the animal soul. It's the final attempt of the animal soul before defeat, yes? Perich of Ches. We'll get there.
It's pretty interesting. This is almost like the Chet Betzadas where the Satan was on the outside, the distractions on the outside.
That's what happens when you finish Tanya. You realize the animal soul is on the outside. It's there, but it's on the outside. It's not you. That's Tanya. When the night we finished Tanya, I returned to Crown Heights and I went into a wedding. So I told him, I said Mazel Tov to the chassan and the wedding was over. So I told him, Mazel, why are you so late? I said, we just finished learning Tanya. He said, 6 years. I said, 6 years. A tale of two souls. I said, a tale of two souls. He says, so who won? Yeah. Yeah. And at the end of his wedding. So I said, we lost the battle, but we won the war. Which is the story of the Beinoni. Loses the battle, but wins the war. So this is called Klippa, it's called Sitra Achira, the other realm. In other words, the realm that does not reflect godliness. It has its own ego. In chapter 6, the Alter Rebbe establishes his philosophical, theological foundation that the cosmic origin of evil is separation. In the perception of independence, that there's something outside of the realm of godliness, of oneness, of spirituality, here lay the origin of negativity that then evolves in more coarse and harsh incarnations. Chapter 7, he explores generally two levels of klipa. Klipas noga, translucent darkness, a translucent husk, and shalosh klipas hatmeis, an opaque husk. Which means those elements in life that are translucent. A glimmer of hope resides within them. A ray of godliness permeates the shell. This includes everything we call neutral in this world. From your checkbook, to the bottle of seltzer in front of me, to the money we make, the food we consume, the cars we drive, the computers we use, the clothes we wear, and the business endeavors we are engaged. All of these belong to the realm of klipas noiga, which can be elevated, sublimated. Their true essence and identity can emerge through our choices on a daily, nay, on a moment-to-moment basis. The way we eat, the way we sleep, the way we have relationships, and the way we do anything we do or we don't do in life. The other form of klipa, shalosh klipas hatmeis, are those opaque husks where the Torah places barricades and says, don't go there. They may be creatures, they may be realities, but this is what we call sin, negative. Until Mashiach comes, the husk is so dark, it's so opaque, that by you dealing with it, you will fall rather than elevate. Besides the Baal Tshuva, he said, who transforms sin into virtue. Chapter 8, the Alter Rebbe discusses spiritual Kabbalistic therapy. The various cleansing procedures that the soul experiences after its passing as a result of its different types of interactions with reality in a manner that affected her integrity and her sacredness. Chapter 9. The animal soul, he says, its hallmark is that it is impulsive. The divine soul's hallmark is it's reflective. The animal soul lives, its capital, its White House is the heart. The divine soul is in love with the mind. The animal soul thrives on impulses, immediate, instant gratification. The divine soul fears not reflection and meditation. Chapter 9, he discusses in actually dramatic terms the perpetual battle between the two consciousnesses over our physical body. Since both consciousnesses have the same brain, nose, ears, mouth, arms and legs, abdomen and liver, etc., at their disposal, they are engaged in a never-ending battle. Who will capture the city? Who will reign supreme in that little city we call the human body? Here the Alter Rebbe describes the story of the human being's life as a tale of two souls. Not living in two cities, but living in one city. Not London and not England and France, or London and Paris, but in our own little body, the struggle of the two souls that he compares to the struggle of Yaakov and Esav in Rivka's womb, La'ayim La'ayim Yemas. The next three chapters explore three personalities, where they stand vis-a-vis this battle of the two personalities that live within us. The spiritual personality and the klipa, the concealing personality that conceals its own essence and the essence of the world. Where do you stand in this battle? Chapter 10 sketches the profile of the tzaddik. We long ago dismissed the translation of righteous man. I told you, even the Rasha of Tanya can sometimes be called a righteous man. I think the tzaddik of Tanya is a superman. A man who totally and absolutely vanquishes his or her egocentric impulse. A man that his entire consciousness is pervaded by the emotions, by the philosophy, by the perspective, by the harmony of the divine, of the godly, of the getliche consciousness within us. In this itself, there is the complete tzaddik and the incomplete tzaddik. The incomplete tzaddik harbors an ego in the subconscious cellars of a psyche versus the complete tzaddik who harbors no ego anymore, since the entire animal soul has been transformed and become a perfect partner of the divine soul. I told you what Reb Tzadok HaKoyen writes, that the only difference will be seen in their dreams. The incomplete tzaddik can dream ego. The complete tzaddik, even his dreams are a reflection of divinity. That's how he puts it, which I think is very interesting. Chapter 11 comes to somebody who's very familiar. He's called the Rasha. Familiar to me, at least. I don't know to you. The Rasha is not a wicked man. The Rasha is a weak man. A person who doesn't possess the courage to fight his impulses. Rather, in his behavior, whether thought, conscious thoughts or words or deeds, he falls prey to the whims of his self-centered identity. Chapter 12, the Alter Rebbe contributes to the man who is no doubt his hero, the Beinoni, who I don't think is an intermediate man, but is rather a possible man. The possible man is the Beinoni. The man for whom he named the entire book, Sefer Shel Beinonim. The Beinoni is that human being for whom the perfection of the tzaddik is beyond reach, but he nonetheless refuses to succumb to the self-centered desires of his animal self and allow them to be realized in his daily life. The Beinoni's inherent life is dichotomized between two states, between two souls, but his garments are an expression of the pristine purity of his divine consciousness. Chapter 13. The points are coming back to you a little bit. Chapter 13. He describes the process that goes on a daily basis in the life of the Beinoni. The caution that the Beinoni must always have since he suffers of what the Alter Rebbe calls a heart condition. Since the Beinoni has not liberated his heart, and in his heart lay an animal that can become a demon, that can grow into a monster. Heyei Beinecha Karosha. Don't become callous. Don't become content, smug. Feel, I'm a chaya. That's a dangerous thing for the Beinoni. It's like a person with a heart condition who starts eating everything he's not allowed to eat because he thinks he's healthy. The Alter Rebbe also discusses the special moments in the life of the Beinoni, and the most special moment is the time of davening. It's that time when the animal soul geht schlafen. And for the Beinoni, it's a tremendous moment. It's that experience in your day where the Beinoni can celebrate his inner vulnerability. Where the Beinoni becomes at peace with himself or herself. Where the Beinoni needs not to put up a defense mechanism. The Beinoni is a free man. The Alter Rebbe says, after davening, he walks out into the street and the animal soul wakes up from its nap. And it says, I'm here, and I'm here to stay. But for davening, it's a shlof. And that's special, that's powerful. During davening, yeah. Without davening, the Beinoni becomes too tormented. It's too hard. Without davening, there has to be that moment of serenity, you know? Even a soldier in the trenches has to have that moment. Chill out, yeah. Well, I wouldn't call it chilling out. It's warming out or warming in. But it's that moment of liberty. At the end of 13, in his characteristic fashion, the Alter Rebbe struggles to come up with a solution for the apparent notion that the Beinoni's spirituality during davening is an exercise in falsehood, since it's inconsistent. And something that's inconsistent is untrue. And he says, for the tzaddik, it's false. But for the Beinoni, it's truth. And he contributes to us the powerful idea that truth is absolute, but in every level, the absoluteness of every level is unique to that particular level. And therefore, truth can be defined as absolute relativity. It's the absolute point of truth in every stage of your condition. So for the Beinoni, prayer is true. Chapter 14. He demonstrates how the lifestyle of the Beinoni is indeed within feasible reach of every man, regardless of brain power, character, or spiritual station. It's also the chapter where he encourages the Beinoni to strive for the level of a tzaddik, at least at particular times in his or her life. As the metaphor has been given when we were learning, professional Olympic swimmers, they often train to imagine themselves as fish when they're in the water. Because if they think that they're fish, we know at least they'll swim as human beings. So the Beinoni may never become a tzaddik. But sometimes let him imagine that he's a fish. Chapter 15, the Alter Rebbe explores two types of Beinonim. The serene Beinoni and the combative Beinoni. There is the Beinoni that God happens to fit in very well to his schedule. He loves learning. He's not hot-blooded. He is not very into physical relationships, in the Alter Rebbe's words. It's just the Jewish system fits very well into his community, his lifestyle, his character, his chemical makeup, etc. And he is the man who the Gemara calls Lo Yavadai. He's a Beinoni, he's a lovely person, but he's not an Eved Hashem. He's not a servant of Hashem. And then there is the Beinoni who needs to struggle, the fighter, the boxer. That's the Breslover expression. The tormented Beinoni. The tormented. The tormented master. I rather like the fighter. Tormented has the smell of existentialism. And existentialism is always defined by the fact that it has questions without answers. You know what I mean? And it's much easier in life to give lectures with questions and no answers. You sound sophisticated. You sound cautious. You sound deep. The great guys, they get up and they ask the best questions. Everybody's, wow. I think the power of the Alter Rebbe is that he asks questions. But he challenges you to answer your questions. And that's why tormented has a question mark at the end. As much as you like to fight, sooner or later you're going to get a punch in your nose that you're not going to like. You know what I mean? Sooner or later, there's going to be avodah. There's going to be the moment where you're going to have to choose between your ego and your God. And that's the moment where the Beinoni serves God.
This is the fighting.
The fifth, not chapter 15. Avodah Beinoni. Chapter 16. The Alter Rebbe defines what he puts as a klal gadol, as a central principle, and that is, not every person has the capability of developing a real emotional emotion towards Hashem. Some people are incapable throughout their life to vibrantly melt away and experience a romantic emotional affection or fear with Hashem, with transcendence, with godliness. Says the Alter Rebbe, do not despair. There is a substitute. There are emotional emotions and there are intellectual emotions. And he says, some Beinonim, for them, the deepest zenith of their relationship is by developing an intellectual emotion, which we called a conviction. You may not have the ability to feel a burning fire and zest for Hashem. A burning flame, a bren, a flaka. You may not. But a conviction, an intellectual conviction, that is not a full-fledged emotion, but it produces behavior that everybody is capable of. And that suffices. And the void between the mind and the behavior, when the heart does not serve as a bridge, that void Hashem fills. Machshava Toiva, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Metzar Filamaisa. He takes your conviction and he combines it to your deed, creating wings for the deed. I am compelled to say this. I said it then. that chapter 16, I believe, holds extraordinary advice for most marriages and most relationships. There are times when you're romantically crazy about your better half, and there are times when you feel nothing, numb and dead. Many of us fall prey to the error, the relationship is dead. Comes the Alter Rebbe and says, a klal gadol. An emotional emotion you may not have, but an intellectual conviction of what you should be feeling, that you can always have. Act on it and it's enough. Chapter 17. He finalizes in one stage of the Tanya, here ends one unit of the Tanya, the verse that this thing is very near to you, in your mouth and in your heart, so that you may perform it. And he explains that in your heart refers not necessarily to a revealed emotional experience, but rather to a conviction that produces la'asaysay. Beficha uvilvavcha la'asaysay. An emotion that's enough for behavior, an intellectual emotion, that is very close and it's available and accessible to every person who has a mind and uses his mind. It's this chapter that is dedicated also to people who have fried their brain and have lost self-control, and the remedy to their healing is to shatter their wall, shatter their fortress, their partition that exists between them and Hashem. Chapter 18. How do you shatter that wall? Huh? You want to know what's the password? There's no password. You're skipping to the 29. You're skipping 4 years. You don't do that. Huh? Tshuva. Grieving. Regretting. Fixing. Breaking. There's the story, Taker of Nachman once told the story. There was a Jew who came, he was on his way home from a long business trip where he earned a lot of money. On the way home, he was traveling through a forest and a thief stopped him. Takes out a gun, he holds him up, and he says, give me all your money or you're a dead man. He had a Yiddish cup. He said, no problem, my dear friend. Here is all my money. Take it, gesundheit. The thief was very satisfied with his compliance, and he gives him the money. Have a wonderful day, be well. He says, 1 second, my dear thief. Before you go, you have to do me a favor. I'm going to come home. You have to know my wife. She is what they call in Yiddish atzatzka. You know, she's something else. If I tell her, she'll ask, where is the money? I'll tell her someone stole it. Somebody, you know, held me up with a gun. She won't believe me. She'll say, you spent it on gambling or on drinking. And she will beat me. Do me a favor. Take your gun and shoot through my jacket. Perforate the whole jacket. So I'll be able to show my plainest and my Rebbetzin, you know. Look what happened. He didn't see a reason why not to comply. Do an old man a favor. He shoots the entire jacket. Amachaya. The Jew takes a look. He says, thank you so much. You're a special man. The guy is about to leave. He says, 1 minute, 1 minute. You don't know my wife. He says, my wife is such a tzatzka that she's going to suspect me that I perforated the jacket on my own just to get away from the suspicion, from the guilt, from the accusation against me. Do me a favor. You have to shoot my hat as well. But this time do it from very close range so that the gunpowder should remain, so I should be able to prove that it was a real gun. He sees no reason not to comply. He takes the hat and he begins shooting it and shooting it and shooting it. And when the Jew sees that the last bullet left the gun, he gave him a kick He took his bag of money and he ran. The thief, who was recovering from the pain, gets up and he says, "These Yidden, they're such crooks." Reb Nachman, as usual, didn't explain the story. He didn't explain the story. So one possible interpretation is, we all have a thief within us that tries to rob us from our sacredness. Some people cannot defeat the thief until the thief has shot out all his bullets on the person, which means some people don't learn that the animal soul will not bring you happiness until they have not fallen prey to addiction, to codependence, to negative behavioral patterns. The sad thing is, in this case, the bullets only affected the garments. But sometimes the bullets affect the very identity of the person. But that's the point, that sometimes, that's what he brings out in 17. Sometimes a person has to mamish hit rock bottom. That he sees that the animal soul is ultimately futile. It's not going to give you the serenity you need in life. It's not. It's based on a shell, on a husk. It's covering up something. It's not at peace with itself. So how is it going to create peace within you? Chapter 18. The Alter Rebbe establishes his monumental foundational idea that in the depth of the soul of every Jew burn continuously a love, an affection to Hashem. Every Jew inherently, the Alter Rebbe says, has emunah, has faith in Hashem. And he defines faith not as an experience which comes because of the absence of rationale, but rather faith means that Hashem is part of the Jew's reality. There is a certain point in his reality where Hashem is revealed and expressed. That's how he defines faith. Faith is a skill in the Jew that senses the infinite. If cultivated, it grasps ultimate reality. In the deepest place of the Jewish soul, there is divinity. Here is the Alter Rebbe's explanation for the sad and tragic phenomenon we know as martyrdom, Mesiras Nefesh, throughout the generations, where millions of Jews have chosen God over the cross or over other elements of idolatry or other forms of idolatry. Not scholars, Kabbalists, rabbis and sages, but peasants, sinners and scoffers of the faith. The Alter Rebbe says that for a Jew, it's ki'ilu davar she'i efshir klal. I mean, a statement that for most Jews at that moment, they didn't even choose to die for God. It's almost an involuntary decision. It's almost something that they don't even have a choice whether to embrace or not embrace. Because at the deepest point of the Jewish life is Hashem. God is not a philosophy for the Jew. God is life. It's the essence of his life. So when that essence emerges, it's like asking him, do you want to die or do you want to die? It's not a choice. Do you want to die? Do you want to die? He is divine. This is a very painful thing to talk about. But we've just seen it. Daniel Pearl was a Jew whom nobody is going to suspect learned Daf HaYomi every day. And was a great scholar in Kabbalah or in Chesha Mishpat and Yerideya. It was quite to the contrary. A reporter for the Wall Street Journal who lived in Pakistan, and as assimilated as a Jew can be, or close. And his last words before those despicable human demons butchered him, literally slaughtered him, shechted him al Kiddush Hashem. His last words that became public to 5 billion people in the world was, "I am a Jew. My father is Jewish, and my mother is Jewish, and I'm proud of it. And then they slit his throat and they killed him. In no other literature besides Tanya chapter 18 have I ever found words that can pay tribute to that moment. Not explain the moment, not rationalize it, and not justify that. The Alter Rebbe will never do that. But to pay tribute to that moment. It's Ayid, Ayid, Ayid.